The Catholic Bishop of Rustenburg in South Africa is warning of an explosive situation on the mines and in other sectors of South African society, as workers are pitted against each other and against the system, against a backdrop of dire poverty and increasing violence. The situation in Rustenburg, home to the Anglo-American platinum mines, is volatile after mine management sacked 15,000 striking miners who are refusing to return to the negotiating table. These striking miners are now attacking and intimidating those who are at work. Bishop Kevin Dowling told me that the agreement reached last month at another platinum mine has compromised normal South African bargaining processes.
We followed with great concern the situation at Marikana, the terrible episode that happened in August, and also the settlement that Lonmin came to with the miners and the other parties. And so, although we knew that unrest could continue, we were very surprised to hear of the extreme situation that you describe. Can you tell us what's going on at the moment?
Well, it was something I feared and many feared. One can understand why Lonmin came to that settlement of giving the miners a 22% hike in their basic salary. They were really very much forced to do something dramatic after that terrible tragedy, because what happened there was it undermined the whole collective bargaining system in the country, which has been developed over years through the unions and management together to discuss wage issues and so on. That was a separate representative group of miners who came to that settlement with management under the terrible pressure of what had happened. And what we feared has happened, that this would set a precedent not only for other miners or mines, but also for other sectors of the economy. Because what was established there was that if you use violence and if you put enough pressure on management, you can achieve your goals. And this has happened, unfortunately, because at the Anglo-American Platinum section, which is another mining company nearer to Rustenburg, in fact, very close to where I live, those miners, some 15,000 of them went on an illegal strike at four of the Anglo-American platinum shafts, also asking for a very highly inflated wage settlement. So that was an illegal strike, just like Lonmin, and it was accompanied by the usual intimidation, burning of shops, of innocent people, terrorizing the local population, using threats of violence against non-striking miners. And the whole situation got out of hand completely there. And then last Friday, the Anglo-American Platinum senior management, after inviting the miners to come back to the negotiating table and go through the existing bargaining procedures, and they didn't do this, and getting warnings and so on, Anglo-American fired all 15,000 of these miners. What happened then, and that's what exactly I feared, they then went to one of the other shafts that is still operating under Anglo-American and started to threaten miners who were coming off the morning shift that they would be attacked. And in fact, a miner was interviewed on South African radio. They were inside the mine, couldn't get out. And they said, the problem is that we live in the same area as the striking miners. So if they carry out their threats, we're in danger of our lives. So you see the situation that has now spread to the Anglo-American Platinum section in the north of our diocese, where there's also an illegal strike, and then outside the diocese. And management now are taking an increasingly strong action against the illegal strikes by firing miners after warnings. And this has spread now to the transport section, where there's been horrendous violence, trucks getting burnt, A driver was killed this week. They threw a stone through his cab window and he had severe brain damage and he was declared brain dead. This is the situation at the moment. Illegal strikes all over the country and increasing violence and mayhem.
So it's the people against the people, the poor against the poor, I understand. What is at the basis of all this?
It would be. I would say fundamentally at the basis of everything is desperate poverty in this country. More than 22 million of our own people living below the poverty line. Huge unemployment, especially among the youth. But then what is aggravating it, huge numbers of economic refugees coming in from other countries, especially women, young mothers, young mothers with babies, single women in a desperate search for a way out of poverty. And they end up in these massive sheikh settlements, which just grow around mine shafts. And unfortunately, the perception created is that the miners, many of whom who live in these shack settlements and then work on the mines, the mine management is responsible for these horrendous living conditions, shacks with no water, no electricity, no refuse removal, no toilets, nothing. They are dreadful places. But the perception that somewhere around mines or somewhere around the big cities I might be able to get a job, that attracts migrants from all over South Africa, the poor areas of South Africa, and from outside the country. And what happens then is they just come into a desperate poverty trap. And the root of everything really is poverty.
And of course the mining companies themselves are in fact very, very wealthy.
They are, but you know, in the absence of actual clear analysis of returns on their investments, on what the different mine shafts are bringing to the mining companies in terms of profits and so on. Some of the mining companies are saying that with increasing costs, for example, our electricity costs in South Africa have escalated massively in the last few years. Electricity is used in a huge way on the mines to power what's going on underground as well as to power the blast furnaces and the smelters, smelting operations, massive amounts of electricity. So costs, the mining companies say, have increased massively, and the productivity of certain of the mine shafts, for example, here at Anglo Platinum, where the four shafts where the miners were striking illegally, the mining company said they were marginal and they were under review. In other words, whether they would continue to actually operate them. So we're living in a climate now where this, with the economic recession, with increasing costs, with less productivity, with mining going deeper and therefore becoming more difficult to succeed in, the cost factor versus profits, so the mining companies say, is becoming increasingly fragile. Now, that, I think, is the problem. Can that be proved openly so that we can see that mining shafts are not operating profitably anymore or are in fact unsustainable and therefore will have to be closed down, and therefore miners will have to accept lower packages to allow mines to continue? This is the debate at the moment, and it's a very tense situation because the miners and the poor have the perception that these mining companies are real fat cats making massive profits, and those profits are going to the management, the senior executives getting huge salaries in comparison to poor miners getting very low salaries. So you can see the volatile mix, and if this spreads throughout the country and at the back of it, millions of our young people, uneducated, unable to get the skills, not getting employed, you see a volatile situation ahead of us in this country. And it's going to need government and the big companies and everybody to come together, I think, at some kind of summit to really look at this holistically.
Absolutely.
Create living conditions for the poor to live in greater dignity, and also what is a just wage, a minimum just wage for workers?
Absolutely. What you say and what we hear, of course, is casts a huge shadow over the Rainbow Nation, you know, the new South Africa, which was seen as such a beacon of hope to all of us, especially in these times of recession here in Europe. It's very hard. And we look at the emerging countries, and South Africa is definitely amongst the emerging countries we look to. What do you hope may happen? Do you think foreign investment must continue to be very visible in South Africa, to be able to give hope to the people, or what else?
I would say, and certainly the government of South Africa, the Treasury Department, have said this is absolutely crucial, that foreign direct investment must continue, especially in the manufacturing sector and the mining sector, the big business sector, and money going into entrepreneurship. This is critical. We need small businesses in their hundreds and thousands, creative entrepreneurships to enable people to get employment and try to live at least at a decent level in life. So foreign direct investment is critical. But then again, the foreign direct investment climate overseas is pretty tough. And they're going to be looking at issues like labor stability, costs, what are going to be our returns on investments. And unfortunately, in the kind of global economic system we live in, foreign direct investors who have to look to mining and manufacturing have got options in other parts of the world. And if they see labor costs particularly as being more inviting elsewhere, they'll go elsewhere. And that's the challenge our government faces. We want to lift, and they want to lift, the standard of life of the poorest people in this country. We all do, but unfortunately we are part of the global economic system and we've got to operate within that. And so the government, as well as trying to attract foreign direct investment by the economic policies they decide on and implement, have also got to look at what can we do in South Africa as a community, as people of creativity, of as people who want to make this country really work for everyone, and above all for the poor. And that, of course, is our concern as church. We have to, after our political liberation, achieve an economic transformation which truly gives hope to the poor and enables the people who are suffering most to live in dignity and with a quality of life which should be theirs as people made in God's image. All our Catholic social teaching principles are absolutely crucial to this whole debate and to where we want to go. So I think we in the church and we in the faith communities really need to be part of this whole discussion going forward. But unfortunately, what is happening here, you see either desperation among extremely poor people who opt for violence as the only way to be heard, or you get people exploiting the poor and instigating violence for whatever objective. For example, at the national meeting of all the union affiliates together at COSATU, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, their own assessment on the basis of an investigation showed that over 50% of their members regarded violence as the way to achieve wage settlements and wage increases. Now, that's very scary, isn't it?
It is. And you also have people like Julius Malema, who seems to be stoking up this kind of sentiment.
Well, that's the problem, you know. And if you get people, what he's doing it for, one wouldn't know. But what we need here is level-headed people who have the common good, one of our Catholic social teaching principles, absolutely in view all the time. What is going to promote the common good and not short-term success for whatever ends? And some of these ends may not be very positive or have any real value for the people. But we have a massive challenge in this country. And I think after 18 years of democracy, so many poor people are not seeing the fruits of that democracy. And that's why you often hear, I don't know if you hear of it overseas, but the service level protests. service delivery protests. In other words, people desperately looking for water to be laid on to remote villages, for electricity to be brought to remote villages, job creation and so on. They're not seeing this, and they're getting increasingly desperate. And so almost, well, at least many of these service delivery protests looking for water, electricity, jobs and services to be laid on, they are getting increasingly violent. They almost start off as violent. Roads are barricaded, tires are burnt, and so on. So we have a very challenging situation in this country at the moment. And certainly, as you said, the Rainbow Nation, we're not a rainbow nation, I would say, in my view. We're not yet a rainbow nation. We've just huge challenges. And the fault lines in terms of class divisions, in terms of the elites living at a terribly high level in comparison to the poor, these are fault lines which could be very problematic going forward.